In 2004, the Lansing Board of Water and Light launched an ambitious project to replace every lead water service line in its service area. This week, the multi-year, multi-million dollar project will conclude with the replacement of the last of those lead lines. In all, more than 12,000 have been replaced at a cost of more than $44 million. Joining us to talk about the lead service line replacement project, Dick Pefley, General Manager of the Lansing Board of Water and Light. Thanks for being here.
Good morning. My pleasure as always.
I've got to ask, where is the last lead service line?
It's right off Michigan Avenue behind Liskey's Auto Care there. There's a house there, and that's where we'll be Wednesday.
Almost 2,700 lines were, upon further examination, determined not to be made from lead. How did that happen?
Well, records over time, you know, we wanted to verify everything. So when we dug into the records and also went out and verified, we dug down and took a look at them, and they weren't lead, so they were already copper. So there was no reason to change those out.
Did that discovery save you time or money or both?
Both. Each service costs about $3,500 to replace, so you can do the math.
Well, I mean, we're all painfully familiar with the Flint tragedy. What does this mean for water users who are who do business with the Board of Water and Light? What does this change?
Well, even though we have a very robust corrosion control treatment plan process, which we're still going to keep in place, that if something would go wrong with that and the protective coating on the pipes would leach off, which takes a lot of time, there could have been the potential of what happened down in Flint. Well, that can't happen now.
There are just over 100 lines that are inactive that have not been replaced. Are these in unoccupied locations?
Yes.
That the idea?
Yes, they are. There are houses that are vacant right now, and if somebody wants to rehab one, then we'll change the service out. But as a measure, we went out and actually dug them up and disconnected them, so they can't be turned on by mistake.
We had General Michael McDaniel of East Lansing on the program last week. He heads Flint's lead pipe water replacement program with some help from the Lansing Board of Water and Light. A lot of people know about that. Can you update us on the BWL's involvement in Flint?
Pretty much after we went down there about a year ago and trained three of their contract crews on how to use our process, which we designed to help speed up lead replacement, we haven't had much involvement. Michael will reach out once in a while with a question, but we haven't physically had to go down and work with them. They're kind of off on our own and doing a good job from what I hear.
And this was technological assistance that you offered, right?
Absolutely. When we first started lead service, we did what was called open trench. That's where you took a backhoe out in the center of the street and trenched to the customer's house, you know, big hole right through the lawn, the sidewalks, driveway. It's expensive. About a year into that, we figured a way out how to pull the pipe through the basement and out into the street without having to dig up the yards. It took a $9,000 job down to about $3,500 and a 9-hour job down to about 4 hours. So we wanted to save Flint having to figure that out. So we went down and trained them how to do this process.
Back to Lansing's lead pipe work here that you're wrapping up on Wednesday. How did the BWL pay for this $44 million?
Well, we stretched it out over time. Like you said, we started in 2004. So through a water rate hike increase, we were able to pay for it. It was very small since we were doing it over a long period of time. We could have been more aggressive, but we'd never had a problem and we didn't anticipate one. But we just thought it was the right thing to remove the lead services, and we wanted to stretch it out to minimize the impact on our customers.
Now that the utility is wrapping this lead line replacement, does that free up dollars that can go to other projects?
It sure does. And what we're going to do now is there's over 880 miles of underground water pipe, and some of that is aging. We have a lot of main breaks, especially in the winter months. We're going to start replacing some of that, and that's something we've wanted to do for quite a while.
And I am told that Lansing becomes just the second city in the country to completely replace all its lead service lines.
That's correct. I believe we started first, but we didn't finish first.
Okay. Madison, Wisconsin, for those who don't know, the only other city in the United States to completely replace its lead service lines. We're talking with Lansing Board of Water and Light General Manager Dick Pefley. Let's shift gears here a little bit. The legislature, state legislature, may pass new energy policy the next few days. Emphasize may. How would that overhaul impact the Board of Water and Light?
Well, it wouldn't impact it because the board is governed by the commissioners that are, represent the city. But their renewable portfolio standard that they're looking to adopt is, well, let's just say the board is much more robust. We're looking at 30% clean energy by 2020 and 40% clean energy by 2030, which is higher numbers than what they're looking at. They're looking at about 15 or 16% renewables by 2020, if what I read is accurate.
Where is the discussion right now involving shutting down Eckert here? We're still on track for 2020. Do I have that right?
Yep. So sometime during the calendar year 2020, we will bring on a new cogeneration plant that will replace the capacity and energy that's lost when Eckert closes.
And there's been quite a bit of discussion over the location that the board has identified as the most suitable for a new substation, because that would require the relocation of the Scott Sunken Gardens and the Scott House. Have you been working with those who are have been? I know in the past you have. Is that still a discussion you're having with the people who oppose that?
Yes, it is. As a matter of fact, I believe last Monday we had a charrette that I was there to help where the community could design the look and the size of the exterior walls, because they're the ones that are going to have to look at them. It went very well, and we've got a couple more charrettes scheduled to allow the community to give us their input on how they want it. Now, that's a substation that is the transmission side that has to be replaced when Eckert leaves. The actual energy and capacity will be a new gas-fired cogeneration plant, which is yet to be sited.
What went down at that first charrette? I mean, how did it go?
It went very smooth. I was there sitting in the back and listening to some of the ideas, and I liked the input. They talked about a living wall on one side, like a green living wall that one side of the wall would have, and I like that. Our engineers took everything down, and when we have our second charrette, we'll take a look and try to pull all that together, and then we'll have a third wrap-up one to show them we think we've got everybody's ideas, and we're ready to take this to construction. Mm.
Update us on the discussion here on a possible rate increase, which in that discussion has been going on for a while, too. Where does that stand?
Well, right now we haven't raised our rates in over 2.5 years, and we will be looking at a long-term rate strategy here in the next 6 to 8 months. When I say long-term, about 3 years, so that we can build, construct, and pay for the new cogeneration plant. And we also want to know, let our ratepayers know what they're going, their rates are going to look like in the next 2 or 3 years. So I like that strategy, and we're discussing that right now.
You have been an advocate of locking in a fixed rate for multiple years. If and when the next rate increase takes effect, do you expect that multi-year approach to be a part of it?
There might be an interim small increase before we go to that approach, because it just depends when we find out, get the estimates back on what the new plan will cost. But we will know that probably 6-8 months. So there would definitely be a 2 to 3 year strategy locked in place, so the ratepayers know what their bills will be through that time frame.
So the cost of the new plant is connected to the discussion of a rate increase.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Last month, the utility announced that the ransomware attack earlier this year cost a total of $2.4 million, which was mostly covered by insurance. The cyber criminals were paid $25,000. How do you feel about your system right now? Do you feel like you're significantly stronger? Do you feel your system's safe?
Yes, we do. We feel that it's safe. During the event, at no time was our customers or employees' records accessed. They didn't access the production side of the company. It just locked us out of our corporate network. And we've made some changes so that they tell me not if, it's when this happens again, we can respond much faster this time.
Hmm. So another attack is kind of baked in the cake.
Well, when you talk to the government agencies that helped us through this, they said it's things that are going on right now. A lot of 1 out of 5 companies are having these attacks. And so I'm hoping that we don't have another one, of course, and we put measures in place to minimize it. But we're not taking for granted that this was a once in a lifetime ordeal.
Does that keep you up at night?
A little bit, less now than it did, especially since I believe we came through it strong. I was very unhappy to have to pay a ransom and, you know, have an insurance claim, but we were lucky enough to have insurance. And some of the changes we made will make it much smoother in the future if they happen to do this again.
Has law enforcement told you anything about who did this? Do we know any more about that?
No, all they told us it was from overseas, across the pond.
As we sit here today, we're still digging out from the first big snowstorm of the year. Some listeners may well be reminded of the Christmastime ice storm 3 years ago and the massive outage that followed. What can you tell us about the BWL's preparations for this winter?
Well, we're in year three of a five-year vegetation management job that's going on here, where we're actually trimming the trees, and wherever we've done our trimming program, we see very few outages. When we had the big windstorm here back in the summer, the area that we had not trimmed on the east side of our service territory, we saw 100% outages. Where we had trimmed, we saw less than 10%. So it shows that it does work.
You came out of retirement to come back to the utility here not too long ago. How long do you expect to stay with it?
Well, I didn't really come out of retirement. I was still there. Some people thought I was retired.
Oh,
but
I
I was the interim general manager, and when they brought on the permanent one 7 years ago, I was thinking about retiring, and the general manager asked me to stay on and build a real cogeneration plant. So I did, and I've got 41 years in, so I'm going to see this next plant through to make sure it goes smooth. I've got some expertise in that area, so I think I can help them there.
We want to thank Lansing Board of Water and Light General Manager Dick Pefley. On Wednesday, BWL's multi-year, multi-million dollar project to replace lead water service lines will conclude with the replacement of the last lead line just off Michigan Avenue in downtown Lansing, and Lansing becomes just the second city in the country to completely replace all of its lead service lines. Thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.